the Dodgers will do whatever it takes to secure a championship team year after year. Kyle Tucker is a luxury to this team. He is not a necessity. He's a luxury.
And I think that's the part that he likes.
And that's the part that he likes. And we've talked about this, whether you know him intimately or you don't. I've spent some spring trainings with Kyle Tucker, getting to talk to him for our tours. He is a quiet, like, walk tall, carry a big stick, leads by example. You heard what he did for the Cubs in that lineup for the young guys in there, Pico Armstrong, Michael Bush. But he gets to slot in and go play with the champs. And oh, by the way, this was, quote unquote, a quieter year for them, Franny. And all they did was get Kyle Tucker and they got Edwin Diaz. Don't forget, they swoop in and also take him from the Mets, because the Mets also wanted to bring him back and whiffed on that one. So it has felt like this East Coast, West Coast back and forth, and the Dodgers are triumphant and they have a behemoth of a team now. I have trouble seeing who is going to beat them in the National League West.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Friday, January the 16th, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNOG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NOG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And you can get me on the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Join us for the chat. It's free of charge. Premium content, updates on the show, and interactions with me if you so desire. So come on over to the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And of course, I want to thank the good folks on the Believe Network for supporting this show. Good morning, early morning here in New York. Talking Mets Podcast coming to you on this Friday morning. And we all have had a wild 72 hours following the news, the Kyle Tucker sweepstakes, a sweepstakes that, quite honestly, wasn't one that I think any of us expected to get sucked into as Mets fans. But we did get sucked into it, and similar to those gut punches that you get with a blown ninth inning save or a tough losing streak or losing a playoff series, I think everybody, when the news came down, what, about 10 o'clock last night, that Kyle Tucker had signed with the Dodgers get their man again. I think everybody had a lot of different reactions, none of it positive or balanced. And I was going to come to you last night, but I said, you know, I need to take a step back. And I know what, in this world of instant reaction, I'm trying to, especially with our premium content, get more reactionary. But I'm glad I don't do that, because as the news comes out, as you marinate on things, I think that your assessment of situations is better. That's just my feeling. And I know that doesn't fit our news cycle. But here's where I'll start. And I'm not going to sit here today, and I've said this at other times during difficult periods that we all have had as followers, fans, whatever you want to call it, of the Mets. There's nothing I could say to make you feel better. And honestly, you're probably angry or sad or furious or whatever the term I could use, the word, the adjective, the verb, whatever you want to use to describe what you're feeling right now. And maybe you haven't even cooled down from last night. Maybe you're not even listening to this the day after. Maybe you're listening to this days after because you need some time to get away from the sport, and that's okay. But I'll give you a couple of seconds. You want to pause the podcast. You want to pause the show. And you want to just scream into a pillow. You want to take a quick deep breath. You want to get every emotion out. I'm going to let you do that. And then I want you to come back, because then we're going to take a real inventory of what happened and what's going on and how we can move forward as all of us together here at the Talking Mets podcast. So hopefully you did that. You're back. And now let's talk about reality. And not all of it's going to be fun, but it's not hopeless either. because this is baseball and baseball isn't won in January. The reality is that right now, the Dodgers are the 96 Bulls. They're like the Lakers in the 80s. We've talked about this. This might be, and I was running some quick numbers, not a deep analysis, just looking at the Dodgers lineup right now. I have it up in front of me here at Roster Resource over at Fangraphs. And when you look at a lineup that has Betts and Ohtani and Freeman and Tucker and Will Smith and guys like Teoscar Hernandez and Max Muncy, and I mean, look, the weak ones in the lineup are Andy Páez and Tommy Edman, and those are not necessarily automatic outs at the 8 and 9 in the order. I mean, you go through Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, you go, oh, you breathe a sigh of relief if you can navigate that four times a game. Now the middle of the order, which is the B part of the order, is Kyle Tucker, Will Smith, and Max Muncy, and that's not easy either. Righty pitchers, especially with the amount of lefty bats in that lineup. And here we are. We were all worried about the Mets. I was one of them. If they brought in Kyle Tucker, how Soto and Tucker with lefties like Beatty, how would the Mets handle not having the kind of righty situations that you would need in a lineup? Well, I mean, the Dodgers are lefty-centric, but then your righties are Betts and Hernandez and Will Smith. Will Smith not chopped liver. So that is perhaps top to bottom, right up there, and I'm not going to go pre-62. I just went from 1962 on. Modern game. I always talk about the modern game in the form of expansion. So all the Yankees dynasties of the 40s and the 50s, I'll put those aside, the 27 Yankees, whatever. Just looking at the modern game, you know, the team since 1962 that scored the most runs in a single season, I bet you don't know that, because I was surprised when I saw it. Not totally, but the team that had the most runs in a single season since 1962 was the Cleveland Indians, not the Guardians, the Indians, that had over 1,000 runs, 1,009 runs in 1999, and they averaged over 6 runs per game, 6.2. The next best team was Seattle, the Mariners of 96, that team post the Yankees series. They averaged a shade less. They were a shade under 1,000 runs. And when you look at those teams, you had Buehner and Griffey and Edgar Martinez and some really good component. A-Rod was on that team. Think about it. A lineup with A-Rod, Griffey, Buehner, Edgar Martinez. Three guys, Edgar Martinez, A-Rod, and Griffey. Three Hall of Famers in that lineup. Yes, A-Rod's a Hall of Famer, even though he'll probably never be. A-Rod's a Hall of Famer. Both those teams did not win because they didn't have the pitching. And oh, by the way, that's the difference with the Dodgers, because if you look at the Dodgers, not only did they steal arguably the best closer in the game away from the Mets and Edwin Diaz, they've got another closer if he straightens himself out in Tanner Scott, and they've got some interesting arms up and down the bullpen. Maybe that's their weakest part. That's why they signed Diaz. And then you look at the rotation, and they got Glasnow and Yamamoto and Snell and Ohtani and Sasaki. Maybe he's a reliever. And look, the pitching has to stay healthy, and I'm not so sure that Snell is as good as everybody thinks, and Glasnow never stays healthy, and I don't know if Ohtani could hold up as a pitcher. I mean, the one that probably is the best of the group is Yamamoto, and we saw what he did and the moxie he showed in the World Series. So it's not like those Cleveland teams in the 90s and that Seattle team that I just talked about that didn't have pitching, or even some of the Yankees teams post-dynasty, like the 07 Yankees that are up there, that honestly just didn't have good enough pitching. Outside of Rivera, even the bullpens weren't great. So that this Dodger team, and I know I'm not making you feel any better, this Dodger team is different, and it's historic, and we're living through it. And I think that if you're Kyle Tucker or Edwin Diaz or any of these guys that have decided to take these shorter-term deals, which is not like they're taking a poverty-stricken deal because they could go back out in the market in a few years and maybe overall just make more money. That was the whole point behind the Mets offer. But LA is a destination, okay, as a city. Taking aside what you hear about the politics and what you feel about LA one way or the other, putting that all aside, there's a lot of challenges that the state of California have from a geopolitical standpoint. It's still paradise. And when you're swimming in the kind of money that ballplayers of this ilk of what Kyle Tucker's making now, when you're swimming in that kind of money, the world is a whole different place. California is a paradise. Great weather, celebrities, team that's won back-to-back World Series, a team that will get favorable media coverage. Oh, by the way, Kyle Tucker, you're going into a lineup where you could just be yourself. You're not asked to go out there and transform an organization or be Robin to Juan Soto's Batman. The Mets beat the Dodgers' offer. If all the reporting as of almost 7 o'clock this morning is accurate, they had a $75 million signing bonus. They did $200 million for 4 years. You add in that signing bonus, that's $275 million. And maybe there's, as you get to this, listen to this show, more will come out. And it doesn't really matter. The Dodgers, what, they did $240 million. So they did the $60 million AAV. At some point, there's deferrals, I think about $30 million in that deal. Mets deal is better. The Mets deal is better. But the Dodgers earned this opportunity not only because of real estate, and yes, they have history. They earned it because 15 years ago when Frank McCourt bankrupted the organization, an equity group came in. They were smart to have Magic Johnson as their celebrity face, you know, pretending that he was involved in the owner to get everybody's interest going, get players involved. Don't be surprised when you have the kind of celebrities on both the entertainment and sports side that are out in LA. You don't think that that plays into it? You don't think players want to be around that? Kids, young guys in their mid to late 20s that grew up with these icons in music and sports that now they're going to be performing consistently in front of? It's part of it. We talk about that in terms of the Knicks and the Garden sometimes. But it's even in that, it's second to LA. They earned that. They built it through the farm system. They earned this opportunity. And I know what everybody's going to say. It's not fair. The sport is rigged. The sport is dying. You can't have this. It's not fair that they got everybody. They earned this opportunity. If this were the Mets, none of you would be complaining or using that as your rallying cry. You wouldn't give bupkis about the sport if this were the Mets. So I'm not going to be here to rail against what the Dodgers are doing. And quite honestly, in a sport that's more egalitarian like the NBA right now with their second apron, it's sometimes annoying how you can't keep players because you can't spend to keep players. Knicks had a pretty good roster a couple of years ago with Isaiah Hartenstein, and they couldn't keep him because they were restricted on how much money they could offer him. He went to Oklahoma City, and I think that, without getting too deep into the Knicks and what's going on with the Knicks, that changed, I think, the course of how they built the roster a little bit. I think if Hartenstein had stuck around, it might have been a little bit different. They couldn't because there were restrictions. So that kind of thing gets annoying. The sports rules are the rules. If they decide to change it a year from now with the CBA, we'll talk about it that time. But remember this, the Dodgers right now have everything going for them. They've got a stacked lineup, a good pitching staff. I mean, maybe the bullpen outside of Diaz is where you could always say there's that variability. They very well may score the most runs we've seen in 60 years. I mean, what makes you think that they can't score over 1,000 runs like the 1999 Cleveland Indians? But also remember something here. The sport, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago when we were trying to discuss the Mets' way of doing business, the sport is a weighted lottery. You get into a tournament in the playoffs. All the Dodgers, whether they win 90 games, 100 games, 118 games, 162-0, let's say. And believe me, as crazy as that is, you'll see some stupidity about that. The media can't help themselves. There'll be some yo-yo that'll say they'll win, you know, 162 games or break the Mariners' record. Maybe they do. We'll see. Baseball's a long season, and no matter how good you are, there's a lot of banana peels throughout the yellow brick road to the World Series. Let's put it that way. All the Dodgers do get, and all they get guaranteed, is five games in a division series. If they have the best record in the league, in the sport, over 162 games in 180 days, all they get guaranteed is five games. And who knows in those five games what happens. It's a period in baseball history. I don't want you now to make this lose love of the sport. It's frustrating. Believe me, it's frustrating. And as a Mets fan, it's frustrating because you've now lost out not only the NLCS to the Dodgers a couple of years ago, not only is the vision of what you thought 5 years into the Cohen ownership where the Mets would be on par with the Dodgers, and they're not, frustrating. Lost out on Bauer. Lost out on Yamamoto. Now you lost out on Tucker. Even though Tucker wasn't really on the Mets' radar, as at least from a hot stove throughout most of the offseason, because nobody knew where that market was going. I know it's frustrating, but that doesn't mean it's hopeless. And for anybody that is talking about this in context of it being historically negative for a sports league, I just looked quickly at the other sports. I didn't look at the NHL. The NHL tends to always be, outside of the Islanders dynasty and the Montreal Canadiens, and I know the Florida Panthers have done some things and the Lightning had some periods, but like there hasn't really been NHL, because that's very much a tournament sport. I mean, that's a playoff sport more so than anything. And yes, I might sound ignorant to the hardcore hockey fans in the audience, but the regular season, I mean, you could have an 8 seed and go into the playoffs and win a Stanley Cup. It's not inconceivable with a hot goalie. But I'd love the NBA in the 90s. That's where I cut a lot of my sports fandom as a young person. I talk about it all the time. You know how many champions there were in the 90s? The Bulls, the Rockets, the Spurs. 3. The Bulls were pretty much what the Dodgers are, except they had the best player in the sport and maybe the second best player in the sport and a lot of good role players, where the Dodgers are just putting maybe the second, the third, the fourth best. I mean, I have to look at top 10 hitters right now with Ohtani. If Betts is on, if Ohtani is not hurt, you might have 4 or 5 of the top 15 best run creators of the sport in one roster. That's scary. But remember, you know, everybody talks about this being, oh, this is horrible for the sport. The NBA had 3 champions in the 90s, and everybody pines and loves 90s basketball. Recently, in the last decade or so, the Chiefs, the Eagles, the Pats have been to a majority of the Super Bowls. I mean, I'm not taking the numbers here, but I just quickly looked at it. And the Pats have been for 25 years, and maybe even for a brief time when Parcells was there, the Pats have been consistently at the top of the sport. And the media celebrates dynasties. I mean, how many times have you heard the media celebrate the Celtics of the 50s and 60s, UCLA back in the 70s, obviously the Bulls and the Pats. And here in New York, they can't get enough of the Yankees dynasty. By the way, they're already defending it, because I've seen some, and it's not media, it's more fans. I've seen some chatter, well, the Yankees did it in the 90s with the core four. Well, yeah. And they use their financial might. But I got to tell you, even when the Yankees were at their best, and Steinbrenner, who was at the end of the road as he was getting a little bit older post-2000. And they did get Mussina, and they did get Giambi. If there was a top player on the market, they got him. They got A-Rod. A-Rod fell to them. That was not planned. Even when they had the top players on the market, they got Sabathia. They got Teixeira. They got Cole decade later. I know when the Yankees have had their financial might and they've had a player to go after, they've gotten them. But even the Yankees, when they were doing that, they could have signed Beltran and didn't. I mean, think about if the Yankees back in 2005, when Beltran offered himself back, ironically, the same weekend that Beltran very likely will be elected to Hall of Fame in a few days. Imagine if they did that. The Yankees, they held themselves back because it's absurd and there was payroll considerations. And obviously, maybe it was a different time in the sport where going for the jugular wasn't something they thought about. The Dodgers are trying to make history. They're trying to say, look, we've got this opportunity. They damn well know that this could go away tomorrow. Even with all this talent, you know, some of these guys, Freeman's 36, Betts is 33, Muncy's 35, Hernandez is 33. So they look at the next 2 to 3 years, this is the window. I mean, even Ohtani's 31. I mean, he's probably not going to slow down as a hitter, but how much pitching can he do? So again, it's not going to make you feel any better, because the task in front of every National League team, and that's what makes this even worse. If the Mets were in the American League, you look and say, look, you play them in the World Series, you play them 7 games, you win, you lose, you got to the World Series, anything could happen. Here in the National League, I mean, the Mets don't have to face them more than 6 times, but you got to get to the World Series to face them. And you might face them in the first round in a short series, and then What are you going to do there? Or the division series? Like, you don't, you have to get through them to get to the promised land and get an opportunity to win. It's frustrating. It goes back to the story I've said a billion times on this show, where players would go up to Pat Riley in the 80s and say, get me to the Lakers. I can't beat you. I can't beat you. And there were some good Western Conference teams in the 80s. The Mavericks, Denver. I mean, for even early Olajuwon years, the Rockets, I know they beat them 1 year. There were some good Western Conference teams. It wasn't until the Lakers aged out that Portland made their run. So it wasn't like the Lakers, as good as they were, had it easy. They were still good teams. They were just that much better. So the game has its way, though, of evening itself out. So I don't want you, the point is, I don't want you to despair here. It's not the end of the world. It's not good. Life isn't going to be any easier. And it's certainly none of what I'm going to say is going to make you feel good. But that's where you're at. Now, here's what you really are here to listen for. I set the stage up with reality. What's next for the Mets? And I'll tell you what's not next for the Mets. Next for the Mets is not just finding out who's available and how much money Cohen could spend and sign someone in the next 24 to 48 to 72 hours to make you feel better. That's not going to happen. Okay? And if it does, and that's what they react and what they do, then Cohen is, that's what you should get mad at Steve Cohen for. Not for tweets that about the Pope and smoke, a funny tweet, by the way. You should be mad about that because Steve Cohen has shown you that he's empowered his president of baseball operation to build the team and responsibly use his financial largesse in the best way possible. And that's not doing that. It's not just doing any of that. It's not making a trade or any of that. I think that, and I know some names have been popped up. I saw what Ken Rosenthal said. Harrison Bader's name has come up. Maybe the Red Sox going after a Duran in the outfield. It would be nice for the Mets to get another offensive piece. And Tucker, albeit there was already talk of it being somewhat of a clumsy fit with Soto because it's the same type of player, it would have been a nice offensive upgrade. Let's put it that way. I think the Mets will continue to look at the trade market and the free agent market and see what opportunities arise. And by the way, and I would have said this and there's no way of proving it because it didn't happen, but if the Mets sign Tucker, it doesn't change my opinion about the offseason, the way the Mets have gone about it. And it wouldn't have changed the fact that it would be nice to get another pitcher that could give you innings. But, you know, that to me has to continue to develop with the course of the markets. Now, I think the markets will move faster. And if you think that the Mets spent the last week or so just focusing on Tucker and they had no other plans other than Tucker or bus, then you think it's another owner that's in, or another president of baseball operation that's running this team. Because I can assure you, they've been moving the pieces all around. They've been looking at plan B and plan C, and maybe you're on plan C right now. I don't know what you want to call it. But they're looking at different things. I don't think they're just going to go back in their hive unless they feel that the opportunities out there don't meet the needs of what they are. They're not good opportunities. They're not financially responsible opportunities that are going, that are opportunities that will make you feel good now in January, but may hurt you in June, July, or even next offseason. So I don't know if what this means, and I don't know if this is true, because right now, if the Mets even get a component piece for the rotation and the offense, I will stand by what I feel. I think that this is not a disaster team. I think it's a team that has one of the more interesting getting to know you phases that we've seen in a long time, maybe ever. And I think it's a team that could range from mid-70s to, you know, high 80s, 90s wins right now, depending on how things shake out. I know that sounds crazy, but Vegas has them around, I read yesterday, around 90, 91 wins. Now, maybe that's an over-under that they're trying to give for gambling purposes, but the over-unders that Vegas gives, they're not capriciously thrown out there. They're pretty well thought out. They're not in the business of losing money, and they never do. But so when the gamblers say, and even Billy Epler talked about this, when the gamblers put information out there, they're pretty well educated on that. I do not believe that 90-91 wins was predicated on Tucker signing, because that's not how they do things. That's not how they do the gambling. So you want to be the Dodgers. You're not going to be the Dodgers trying just to buy players. It will help, obviously help. The Dodgers got to this point by building the foundation. And the foundation needs to be built two ways. Building a system of development, which the Mets have done. It's not talked about a lot. It's funny. When other teams have done it, it's been applauded. There's been literally everything but a pennant hung up in their stadium by the media. Mets have been doing it. It's kind of a sidebar. Okay, but the Mets have done that. They've built a farm system. They are adding to their infrastructure with coaches and technology and thought processes. All that's been going on now for 2 years with Stearns. That's the behind-the-scenes stuff. That's the non-sexy stuff. Now, will it work out? We don't know. So far, it hasn't. It's gotten them to Game 6 of the NLCS on basically, like we've talked about, a few plays, three home runs that got them to Game 6, or else we wouldn't even be talking about the OMG Mets. So that's where it is. But if this is really going to get to the point where the Mets are going to be a consistent winning team. Let's not talk about World Series or bust, because I go back to what I said earlier in this conversation. It's a weighted tournament. It's a tournament sport. It's very hard to stack the deck in your favor to get to the World Series. The Dodgers, who have maybe in the history of the sport for the rest of our lives, have done it in the grandest way possible. I don't think you'll ever see something like this again, because a lot of things have to come together. Location, team success, opportunities with free agents. It's not, there's a confluence of things that have happened. So this is an anomaly. But the way that you do it, the way that you could control the situation, is the farm system needs to come through. And it can't just be one prospect, or it can't just be a Pete Alonso and nobody else, or a Matt Harvey and a Jacob DeGrom and a Wheeler and a Syndergaard, and then you go dry on pitching for a decade. Can't be that. It has to be a consistent situation. And as soon as you start to implement these low-cost, high, very talented individuals into the roster, think about how the Mets incorporated a lot of those young pitchers in 2014 into 2015, and they won a pennant. Now, the only difference now with that is that if that was Steve Cohen's team, they would have went out and they would have leveraged that pitching with big money free agents on the offensive side. That ownership couldn't do that. Now the Mets are trying to get the big money free agents, and they're not quite there on the player development side. They're getting close, but they're not there. This year will be a critical year. And that's what you have to hang your hat on. And I know that's not going to make you feel better, because you're right. For out of the top 30 prospects in the Mets system, there's probably 10 that you'll never hear from again. Maybe another 5 that'll disappoint. Maybe another 5 that they trade. And then you have about 10 of them that will range between very good. You know, maybe you get a jewel that becomes a future Mets Hall of Famer, or maybe an elite player, a Lindor type, a Soto type. Maybe that's probably the least likely. But at the very least, you might be able to, in about 2 years, hang your hat on guys like A.J. Ewing and Jet Williams and Carson Benj. And, you know, maybe it's not the three kids that came up in August that are the ones anchoring the rotation, but maybe it's a Will Watson or a Santucci, Jack Weniger, maybe something like that. That's what we're here to watch this year. How's this developing? And already you saw it with the Mets, because they have a good amount of talent. They traded a talented minor leaguer yesterday to free up some international signing pool money to help finalize everything with the international class that they've been working on, which those guys are 5 years away from even being on the radar. So let's not even talk about them. But that's what they're doing. These are all the back-end things. So, yeah, while you're talking about Tucker, while I'm talking about Tucker, which is important about 2026, and make no mistake, I'm not happy that they lost out. This wasn't the first guy that I targeted. You guys know, and I'm not going to get deeper into that because that's not the point of this show, but I'll talk briefly on the way out here. But it's going to make a difference going forward. The Dodgers and this version of the Dodgers is not going to be great forever. As a matter of fact, I don't think that they have more than a 2 or 3 year window. And with all the draft picks, they gave up like 4 or 5 draft picks this offseason with the, you know, signing of Diaz, signing of Tucker. You know, they might this might they might look at this as, hey, this is my last gasp before I take a step back. And I mean, look, that could be 4 years from now, and they might have another two World Series, and they could go down as the team of the 2020s. And that will always be there forever. That'll always exist. That'll never go away. And it's worth it if you have a couple of bad years. And a team like the Dodgers, their money, a bad year might be like what the Yankees considered a bad year since Cashman took over. Or actually, I should go back, since 1993, where you win, you know, mid-80s and maybe miss the playoffs, which they've done a couple of times. Which is really, for some teams, not a bad year. It's not a bad year. The only other thing before I wrap up here and get to, you know, maybe some thoughts on what's next about Tucker choosing the Dodgers in LA over the Mets, and I think it's something that you all have to look in the mirror about. The fact that the fan base couldn't handle a tweet from the owner that was kind of funny about waiting for an answer from Tucker and comparing it to waiting for the smoke billowing for the announcement of the Pope, that has been cited by somebody who actually writes for Baseball Prospectus as reason for players not wanting to come to the Mets. And the owners should shut up. And I even got emails. And look, I respect the emails. It's, you know, the guys that send the emails. I'm not trying to disrespect you at all. But the fact that you can't handle this, and I thought it was funny, that you can't have fun with this whole thing, it really, to me, is disturbing. And it makes me wonder, as a society in general, if we're so joyless now for a variety of non-baseball reasons that baseball is the only thing we have left, and it's become so serious and so much of a job that now it's like you can't even joke around. It's almost like, how can Cohen make the PC version, the politically correct version of the team that the fan base can handle? Now, I still think it's a loud minority of people that fall into this category, but it's annoying. I'm frustrated and disappointed too. It was like a gut punch. Even though I wasn't the Tucker guy, and I'm still one that would have said, even if Tucker had signed, I thought Bellinger with his versatility is a better option. Now, will they jump into that pool? I don't know. I feel like it's just a matter of the Yankees and Bellinger figuring out if anybody else will swing in, and then Bellinger say, all right, nobody's swinging into this derby, so let's figure this final details out. That's where I think that's going. I don't know if the Mets are willing to reallocate and jump into Bellinger, because then why wouldn't they have just done that? I think it's a better overall fit than Tucker, who's a better hitter, but also has injury concerns. And there is a certain amount of duplication, although when you have a hitter like that, you figure it out. But the fact that that's a conversation, that the tweet from Cohen is a thing, and the media will bring it up, and that the fans are angry and can't handle it. There are fans that are angry that the Mets didn't go all out to offer him a 10-year deal just to beat the Dodgers, because now it's about beating the Dodgers, that are blaming Stearns and the very smart business manner in which they go about, which now you know how the Mets conduct business. The fact that this is a thing, did you ever think that players see that, especially younger players now that grew up in a Twitter, social media, Facebook, Instagram world? They see the fan behavior. They see how the fans pushed the owner's wife off of Instagram. They saw how Soto and what Soto went through. You don't think players talk? You don't see how when you go to the stadium, and when I got on your case a couple of years ago before the OMG run, that everybody spent the first homestand of the season yelling and screaming at the players. Yes, they went 0-6 and lost some games, but you don't think that that environment contributed to some of the bad play? We had that conversation. You don't think the environment, when it swung around and got positive during OMG, helped the team? Now, I'm not saying be blind and be Pollyannish, but I'm saying is this is a tough place to play, and you guys are fickle. And let's face it, you got Chavez Ravine, you've got Paradise, palm trees, celebrities, Beverly Hills, and money on one end of the coast, and you got chop shops and negative, woe is me, nasty, immature fan base on the other coast. Maybe when the casino and the park gets put up, it'll change it a little bit. Crappy weather. I mean, you're living it now if you're in New York, the crappy weather. And you want to know why the guy turned down more money to go to LA? You don't think that that plays into it? Now, you can't control the weather and the chop shops, but you can control your behavior. And I'm not so sure if I'm a player. I'm going to be honest with you guys. And you want to say, oh, I'm not going to listen to you, Mike. I hate you. That's okay. Like, I'm here to tell it like it is. If I were Mike Silva in his 20s right now and had the talent, like a Kyle Tucker or Juan Soto, to be even considered a top free agent in any class, even if I was a B free agent, if you think I wouldn't pause about coming here and dealing with you, the media, all the other garbage and nonsense, think again. And let's say I'm Mike Silva, who grew up a Mets fan as well. I might still do that. I might still, like, pause. Not everybody's like Johnny Franco or Frank Viola, who grew up and wanted to play for the Mets. Granted, they came over on the coattails of the 80s. And I know, they're too soft for New York. And maybe, look, part of me here to defend you, the fans, and the Mets and the organization, maybe Tucker really didn't want to be in New York. Maybe he felt, look, I'm going to come here under scrutiny and pressure. I'm expected to protect Soto and be his Robin, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And if these fans don't get exactly what they want, they're going to turn on me. At least I go to L.A. I'm hiding. A guy like that, and there was talk about that. I think Joel Sherman brought that up. I think many of the national media who are clued into the vibe around clubhouses around the league, I think that was talked about a lot, about Tucker not wanting the spotlight in New York. Remember, he's made most of his living in Houston, playing in a market that, let's face it, is far from what New York or even LA is. But at least in LA, as you go out there, and look, those fans, I've ball players tell me, I've said this before, very tough on the opposition. They're it's a tough home field advantage. But I don't think they're New York negative from afar. Now, maybe somebody out in LA who follows the Dodgers, even though, you know, you're listening here to the Mets and you're a Mets fan and you see the vibe, maybe you could disagree. But that's my observation. I mean, the fact that this was even talked about by somebody who writes for Baseball Prospectus, that the Cohen tweet is part of the reason players don't want to come here. I mean, come on. If that's the case, then I don't want that player. I mean, I think people take social media too seriously anyway. But, I mean, that's just my sidebar. Now, before we wrap up, before we head off, I'm already way into, I mean, this will be a regular show. This won't even be an emergency subset here. What's next? So I do think it'll be interesting how they pivot. Will they get into the Bellinger market? And will Bellinger be a consolation prize? I don't think so. Will they go more component with a Bader and Austin Hayes for the bat? That I see more likely. I love Harrison Bader. I don't love him as a corner. I don't think his bat, even though it was much better with the Phillies, will sustain. Maybe he's figured something out. He had a good offensive year, particularly with the Phillies. He hits left-handed pitching historically, even though he didn't the year he was with the Mets. I love Harrison Bader. Maybe a short-term deal, that's something that you look at, the defense. Austin Hayes was a former top prospect, first-round pick. Mashes lefties, that's a possibility with a bat. The pitching, this Framber Valdez's market. And remember, here's the thing we learn. The Mets will go in all in on a free agent at the top of the market like a Soto if they feel that he's worth it and he's in the right age group. They did the same thing with Yamamoto. If you're in your prime or late prime, they're going to try to give you a higher AAV, shorter-term deal to mitigate the risk. That's their free agent strategy. Now, from a standpoint of prospects and what kind of prospects they trade and how they hoard versus how aggressive they are, we haven't got a feel of that. We'll see how deep they go with Freddie Peralta. The Skubal negotiations for arbitration are getting kind of nasty. I still don't think that's going to lead to a trade, but we'll see. And it would be, and I know the joke's already going out there, and I could see it happen if they, you know, depending on how their farm system plays out and the offers, what do the Dodgers have to lose? Hey, try to get Skubal. Really, really, let's get crazy here. Oh, the sport will blow up. That, if that happens, the sport will blow up. And the biggest thing I think that 2026 is going to be about, and I know just 2 years after nearly making the World Series and after his offseason of Soto and the excitement of being potentially a pennant contender, and playing at the top of the league, and with all the disappointment of the second half, the last thing you want to hear from me is, hey, let's see how the Benjes and the Williams and the Ewings and the young pitchers develop next year. Because that could be a fun season, but that not necessarily will be a season where you feel that you have a shot to do anything. Will that hurt attendance? Attendance is going to get hurt. The media and the fans on social media are already telling you they're going to make sure that Cohen is going to get punished. They want to punish Cohen for just because they're upset. They're upset that things are not where they want them to be. So they're going to punish Cohen. They punish him at the gate. That's your prerogative. That's your money. That's your power. Now, does that lead to bad decisions by ownership and the front office that compound the team mistakes or the team lack of success and almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy? I don't think David Stearns will do that. David Stearns is going to do things his way. He talked about it. He came out and talked to the press. He said he's going to do things his way. And he's confident in his vision and plan. And he's confident that, hey, no Diaz. And really, I think if Diaz and Alonso, even if one of them were resigned, I think that it would be mitigated, this anger. But a large portion of the fan base can't get over those two guys. And I like both of them. But I'm over them. And if Kyle Tucker signed, they think you would forget about Alonso's bat. The Diaz thing is a little bit harder to make that up. You're probably never going to see a closer like Diaz at that level, what you saw over a couple of years, for a long time. But he's also a closer. Remember that. So that's where I'm at. You know, the dynasty, where the sport is, perspective on the dynasty. But ultimately, I don't want you to lose your passion and joy for the game. Baseball has a way, even with the probabilistic outcomes stacked against you, and still making for an interesting soap opera storyline. And I have no doubt that will continue. It is not about winning the offseason. The offseason is not a sport. It's when transactions happen that you build a roster. We've created it through social media and the profit centers of MLB into somewhat of a reality show, but you don't have to win this reality show. You have to conduct your business during this reality show. The winning happens in the spring and summer, and obviously the ultimate win happens in the fall. So that's all I got. We'll be back on Sunday. We will be doing at least our Hall of Fame show. I think by that time, it'll be 48 hours later. Will the Mets make a move? Who knows? But the dust will settle, and we'll have some more perspective about what's next with the roster. Maybe we could even speculate on what a good plan C will be. But right now, we're still reacting to Tucker, to the Dodger craziness, and I think that that was the focus today. So stay tuned. I'll be back in a couple of days, and who the hell knows what's going on in this sport in a couple of days. The way it's going right now, it could change as soon as I sign off. You can check me out, of course, all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And like I said, come check out the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Join us in the chat. Sign up for premium content. Get updates on the show. And if you want, you can interact with me. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Friday. Try to enjoy your weekend. Get out, have some fun. Maybe get away from baseball for a little bit till the next bit of news. Till Sunday, take care, everybody.